Columbus, since the pandemic, is beginning to rethink how it wants its heart to beat, moving from business-focused to apartment-focused, with an emphasis on growing retail businesses on the first floor. That's where the Ground Floor Growth Initiative comes in. It was started to diversify Columbus's downtown retail spaces by helping with rent and renovation for minority and women-owned businesses. It's been about a year since the program got underway, and all signs wanted to check in and see how it's going. We begin with Columbus City Councilman Nick Bankston. Welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me, Anna.
So you were elected in, you took office in 2022.
Correct.
And almost immediately you began working on the Ground Floor Growth Initiative. What made you want to jump into this?
Yeah, you know, in 2022, when I took office, we were still just coming out of the pandemic and understanding what the pandemic and the impact it had on our downtown. For me, it was a focus. Being born and raised in Columbus, I remember memories of downtown and what it was for me. It was a place that our family would gather and go, and days of City Center and those types of things. And so for me, it was having a focus on downtown, but also understanding that if our downtown was going to come back, knowing that there was going to be a concerted effort by both the public sector and private sector to invest and to do everything that we could to ensure that it did come back, that evolution of our downtown had to include diversity. It had to include the great diversity that we see all across our city. And so immediately it is one of the things that we focused on, because being chair of the Small and Minority Business Committee at the time, and I still do chair that, we wanted to ensure that our downtown represented all types of small businesses. And so we want business to thrive everywhere, but we also want those small businesses to have a place and see themselves in the heart of our city.
So can you kind of lay out for folks what the First Floor Growth Initiative is, how it works, what you guys are doing?
Yeah. And so, you know, we've called it the Ground Floor Growth Initiative because we had a lot of development, as you could see, downtown, and a lot of the apartments or residential above being filled, but not necessarily the ground floor spaces. And so really we wanted to be intentional and make sure that we made that investment and that we acted as a catalyst. So there's really three components to it. It is technical tenant improvement dollars to help buy down the lease payment. So this is upfront dollars to help with the build out of these spaces. It is also a graduated rent. And so we work with Downtown Columbus, Inc., who is the master leaseholder and helps to administer that component of it. And so that's 50% of the lease will be supported by the city in year one, 30% of the lease in year two, and 10% of the lease in year three. And that's because we know that the first 3 years of business is typically the hardest, but also doing business in downtown is extremely unique. And then the third component, which I think is probably one of the most critical, is technical assistance throughout those 3 years. So ensuring that those small businesses had the expertise at their fingertips to be able to not only open their doors, but to be successful in those 3 years. And so we're working with the Columbus Empowerment Corporation, who is working with those businesses to ensure that they're successful in those first 3 years.
And there are five businesses that got these initial grants, correct?
Yeah, so actually four.
Four.
We are really excited. One of them is already open, Three Bites Bakery at 12 East Broad Street, Black Kahawa Coffee, which will be opening at 2 East Broad Street in November, actually. And then Quality Wellness is a gym, and we're looking forward to that. That'll be opening at the top of the year. And then last but not least, what is the Evolvery Restalgic, that will be opening in April 2025. And actually, I think you just corrected me. It is five.
Oh, okay.
and then Evolvery Clothing, which is a clothing store, will be opening in Q1 of next year, too. So all of them opening in different times, but all concentrated in the Gay and High area to ensure that we cluster them together so that they can build off of each other and really build the energy that is happening there naturally at Gay and High.
Yeah, so as somebody who used to work at the State House for several years over close to Gay and High, I will say that pre-pandemic, it was businesses seemed to revolve around the legislature, around state government employees, around the people that populated those businesses and worked in government. A lot of places, I would lament on late nights at the State House, everybody had already rolled up and closed. Now, if you're going to build a community in that area around residential, things have to fundamentally change.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's where we're going, right? Downtown is not going to just simply cater to office towers anymore. It's going to cater and become a 24-hour neighborhood. And it's really interesting because when we talk about economic development, there's always this adage that the rooftops have to come first and then the retail follows. Well, we're at a place in downtown's evolution, if you will, that we have to do both. And I say that because, as you can see, office conversions happening to residential. We have a goal of having 40,000 residents by 2040. Folks will choose where they live, not simply based off of how close its proximity is to their work, for instance, but based off of the amenities and the vibrancy around it. And so as we're putting more units online, we have to simultaneously be catalytic in ensuring that there are those amenities that a resident would desire, right? Somewhere where I can go get something to eat, somewhere where I can grab a coffee in the morning. On the weekends, maybe I want to go down and shop a little bit, right? So we have to do both simultaneously in order to, I think, attract those residents to downtown to make downtown their neighborhood of choice.
So I know the business has only been open a couple of weeks, so it's probably too soon to say how this first round of leases are doing, but I did want to ask what has been their reaction, particularly to the renovation help, because I think getting money to build out and customize a business, getting that loan, that is really the barrier for a lot of people.
Absolutely. I mean, it also is the barrier in that it will make your lease price go up, right? If you can have those type of improvements embedded into your lease, but then that lease gets to a point where it's not achievable. So having that upfront assistance and also working with the developers and the property owners. I can't say enough to the property owners who have stepped up and raised their hand and are a part of this program. They are intimately involved. And so working with quality contractors and quality designers to ensure that the space is reflective of the vision that these small businesses want is critical. So I was just with Doug at Black Cowboy Coffee checking in over there on they're turning dirt and things are looking dusty. But I mean, when you look at that space, it looks nothing like the Tim Hortons that was there. So really excited to see.
Oh, is that where it's going?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know where that is. On the corner? That's a great spot.
Absolutely. And think about this. Black Cahoba Coffee, it really is the origin of where coffee comes from, which is Kenya. And it is at the corner of Broad and High, which is the origins of our city. And so it's those kinds of stories that I think make this initiative so great that wouldn't be an opportunity that we had not for this initiative. And so it's those stories, it's those visions and those dreams of these small minority women-owned businesses that are just getting a shot to tell their story and to be a part of the fabric of our city.
So the second round just closed the application process. I'm sure you can't tell us anything about, you probably haven't even selected who's going to quote-unquote win.
No, but what I can tell you is just as much demand as the first round. So we had 78 applications. We have roughly four to five spaces that we're working with. So again, trying to get that down from 78.
This is like getting into an Ivy League college.
Absolutely. In the first round, we had over 100 applications. And I think that shows the energy that's out there. And we wanted to go that route, right? I think we are curating and making sure that what we put there is complementary to what is already happening at Gay and High, but also that is going to cater to residents. But we also did it at application because we wanted to see what was out there, what ideas are happening out there. And so it's really fascinating, some of the ideas that have come about. The application process, of course, looks at things like financials and those types of things, because again, it's not simply about opening your doors. We want to make sure that these businesses are in a growth phase in their business and that they're going to be successful.
Yeah, you want them not just to make it the 3 years of assistance, but to make it beyond that runway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the success of this program will be that if we look 5 years from now, are those doors still open? Are those businesses still populated with diverse businesses? Again, my vision for small business and the small business agenda that we have at the city is all about sustainability. How are we creating an ecosystem that provides the tools and opportunities necessary for small businesses to not just open their doors, but to keep their doors open?
So this investment was about $500,000. Am I correct?
Actually, a little over $1 million. So it's $1.7 million over the 3 years.
Okay, for the three. Okay,
for the 3 years, and so that is everything from the tenant improvement to the graduated rent payments and also the technical assistance. So we did try to, on the front end, make sure that we had that investment so that the program could run smoothly over the 3 year investment.
We're going to be hearing from two of the first grantees later on this hour, but I did want to ask you a little bit about residential growth downtown, because one of the things we've heard a lot since the pandemic is we have all of these office buildings. Why not make them into apartments? Now, that obviously comes with its own challenges. Mm-hmm. Cubicles don't need windows, but apartments do.
Right.
So laying those out is tricky. How is that effort going?
I think it's going really well. We were ahead of the curve compared to some other cities. So there is the old Continental building there at Gay and Fourth that is being converted. The PNC building is now open as well, and some other conversion. And really what it is I don't think that every office building will be converted. That's not what we need.
No.
We need the right size, the amount of office. But the more units that we get in downtown, one, what that will do is drive competition, which will help get us to lower price points. Get us a diversity of housing stock. The city is extremely invested in affordable housing. We just opened earlier this year an affordable housing building off of Town Street. And so it's those kinds of efforts of working with our partners at Downtown Columbus, Inc. and other private developers to say downtown is open and coming back, and that we want to make sure that there's a diversity of not just businesses, but also housing and the population there.
How does Zone In fit into all of this?
Zone In is critical. Zone In is really about how do we take the density and put them on our corridors. Downtown is unique in that it doesn't have any height restrictions, and it is the place where you'll see the most density. But Zone In is going to be critical because I think it'll concentrate our efforts, particularly on those corridors, to ensure that we are putting density in the right place, but also it's going to help with other initiatives like Link Us and us getting transit. So having a better transit system that gets you into downtown for that show or for that festival, right, is going to bring back the vibrancy of our downtown.
So is there any thought towards, I know this is still early into this program, this ground floor growth initiative, if it works, are you considering maybe modeling out in other Columbus neighborhoods?
Absolutely. I've always seen this as a pilot, as a catalyst. And if we can do it in downtown, we can replicate it in other parts of our city and even other parts of downtown. And I think that's where, once we get the kinks worked out and we look at this, maybe that looks different in Linden, or maybe that looks different in King Lincoln. But I think those three components of helping with the build out, ensuring that we give you a runway to be successful, and also providing that technical assistance. I think that's the most critical piece of this. Is we have to, sometimes folks have a great idea. They have a great piece of great food or a great product, but it's the business aspect and a lot of times why folks' doors close, not necessarily because their product wasn't good, but because they don't have the back office and all those types of things in place. So absolutely, I think that this is just a catalyst for more programs like this in all of our neighborhood centers.
So obviously, I would assume success would be 5-10 years from now. All these businesses are still open. But are you hoping that it also goes beyond that, that maybe it is a catalyst for other people without the program to start filling those vacant storefronts?
Yeah, I think it's about a catalyst. I think success is also going to be, you know, maybe that that store that opens today expands and they grow out of their space and they move somewhere else in downtown or somewhere else in the city. But I've said to the cohort, you are a catalyst, right? We want you to be successful because we want you to be the example that shows another minority business or another woman business that I belong here and I can do it too, right? And so seeing someone go first, it's scary. So I think the first five, that's what we'll call them, and thank them for stepping up, because putting your dream out there and going into a place and going to brick and mortar for the first time for some of these people is a very scary thing. But I think having those components there to ensure that we have their back and that they're successful will signal to other folks, one, that downtown is coming back, and that it's that you can do business in downtown and be successful. But two, downtown is for me. It is for all of us. If the moniker that downtown is everyone's neighborhood rings true, it has to be reflective also in the storefronts and the diversity of our of the city as well.
If it's really going to be the heart of Columbus.
That's right. That's right.
That was Columbus City Councilman Nick Bangston. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're talking about transportation and getting people to and from the heart of the city. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about the revitalization of downtown Columbus and how we fill the shops on the ground floor. The pandemic had a major impact on the city, and this initiative is working to help fill empty retail spaces as the city moves from offices to residential. But revitalizing downtown takes more than opening shops. It involves safety, amenities, transportation. Joining us now is Mark Conti, Executive Director of Capital Crossroads and the Discovery Special Improvement Districts downtown. Mark, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
So we were talking with the city councilman in the first segment about opening businesses, filling those empty storefronts, an important critical role for any downtown. But I wanted to ask, what comes next? What do we need just beyond a whole bunch of filled retail space?
Well, it's with downtown, it's always a both-and strategy because we have all kinds of different sectors in downtown. We have residents, we have office workers, we have a lot of visitors going to attractions. We have traffic coming in and out for the State House, people coming downtown to do business. We have a major medical center, Grant Medical Center, with level one trauma unit. Plus four colleges and universities that combined have an enrollment of somewhere between 25 and 30,000 students. So when you see a downtown as diverse as that in its uses, we need strategies that address everything.
I want to talk a little bit about transportation because COTA used to have a free C-bus circulator for people working downtown. Any chance that's coming back?
I think so. It's probably the number one thing I hear when I talk about COTA with people in downtown. It was extremely popular. I also felt it was a gateway for people to take transit that hadn't taken transit in a long time. Our district started a downtown transit pass program for workers who worked in eligible buildings in our district. We were able, through the payment by the property owners, we were able to provide everybody free transit passes. And within 3 months, we were able to double the number of workers taking transit to work, which was pretty remarkable. But I think a lot of that stemmed from the fact that people had been re-exposed to transit by using the C-bus.
What about the AirLink bus? Because I think a lot that used to take people to the airport, from the airport to downtown when there are conventions. And I think about the Arena District and Nationwide and the growth there. Like, do you want to see an easier way to get from the airport to downtown, especially as we try to incentivize bringing these big conventions in?
Yes, it would be great to have the AirLink bus back. And I can't speak for COTA on all of their service,
no.
But much like a lot of employers, especially with customer-facing service, much like COTA has, they faced a worker shortage after COVID. So they had to really cut back on service. And if you're sitting there in COTA's seat now, you're starting to get more drivers, you're starting to add back service, and you have to think, do I need to put that airline or that airport run back in, or is there some other service that's serving a critical neighborhood that could be boosted first? And I know they have to weigh all those priorities all the time.
So the pandemic was life-changing in so many ways. And I think in a lot of ways, we still don't fully understand all the impacts that it's had. But one of the things I particularly noticed as somebody who, you know, before the pandemic, I was working at the Dispatch right across the street from the State House. I was there every day. A lot of state employees were there every day. And then we all disappeared for a while. And then a lot of us, when we came back, we came back hybrid. How big of an impact has that had?
It's had a noticeable impact. And you're right. We still don't know the full effects of that. There was a speaker who came to town last year who basically said it was like a giant meteor had hit the earth and it's going to be years before we fully realize what had happened and what the impacts were. For our organization, we do place management. So we really didn't leave. We stayed there every day to make sure everything that needed to happen with cleaning and safety was still happening. And so it was wonderful to see people come back once the vaccines became available. And it's been ever so slight, but every month there's a little bit more people working. And now we're seeing a lot more companies, larger companies, that are changing their work from home policy. So I think we'll see even more people starting to come back downtown at the end of this year, early next year.
One of the things you hear sometimes about downtown, rightly or wrongly, is concern about safety. Has CID done safety studies, or what are you doing to sort of allay people's perhaps misguided concerns about the safety of being downtown, particularly after dark?
Well, first off, downtown's the safest precinct in the city, and it's been that way for decades. Given the sheer number of people that are downtown every day of the week, compare that to how many crimes actually happen. It's extremely safe. Most people, if they experience a crime downtown, it's going to be what we call a quality of life crime. It's going to be a car break-in. It's going to be vandalism. It might be breaking into a business. It's not going to be violent crime. Now, there have been a number of late night shootings that we've seen outside of nightclubs over the last 4 or 5 years. And we've seen that in a lot of parts of the city, and we've seen that all across the country. It's been really interesting since the pandemic ended. Before the pandemic, you know, we used to have big bar clusters, one of them being on Park Street. And I would look at the crime stats every month. I'd see a lot of assaults, a lot of car break-ins, but there was never gunfire. Now it seems when a fight breaks out at a bar or outside of a bar, the guns seem to come out really, really quickly. And again, that's happening not just downtown, but throughout the city. And I know the city has plans to address that, and they've been addressing it already. But it creates these headlines, though, that makes it seem like our neighborhood or these other neighborhoods are unsafe, and that's just not true.
Let's talk a little bit about the Ground Floor Growth Initiative. The councilman kept referring to it as a catalyst, and I wonder what your take on that is, because I do think if there's a dozen empty storefronts downtown, it can be scary to fill the first one.
Yes, and I can't say enough good things about the council members program. We did a retail recruitment program for several years, beginning back in 2008, and we found that we had a lot of interested retailers, and we had a willing market that needed more retailers. What we were having a problem was finding the appropriate space for them, and Bankston's program really addresses the needs we were identifying, that we needed space that was clustered, so the businesses could feed off one another in a high foot traffic area. We're doing that at Broad and High and Gay and High. And they needed to be white boxed and ready to lease. And the incentive program provides for that. So I think it's the best possible program we could get to see if this really works. And I say that can we see if it really works? The other thing is we have to keep in mind, it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. Not all of these businesses will make it. I hope they all do. I hope one of them becomes the next Jenny's or for the ones for your older listeners like me, thinking about Cheryl's Cookies, how they started in the old French Market at the Continent. And so these types of incubating programs can really have this impact on businesses that will last decades.
Yeah, I mean, statistically, the majority of small businesses, when they fail in those first 3 years.
Yeah, and this will provide, you know, some, I think, assurance to the property owner, because property owners, they want,
They don't want churn.
They don't want churn. Ideally, they would find a tenant that could do a 10-year lease and have great credit. Well, those are the national chains. They're not going to be the ones to come back first. If we're going to build up downtown retail, it's going to come from the independent operators.
The wraparound services that this provides, like education on marketing, budgeting, finance, I feel like that may be the most critical part of this beyond the renovation and the rent assistance.
Yeah, because you may know how to make the best sandwich in the world, but do you know how to keep your books? Do you know how to market that sandwich? Are you really attuned to marketing on social media? We have existing retailers that call us all the time. One called last year. They needed help with their tax return. And so being able to connect those businesses with resources, the small business resources that the city has been really helpful.
I would think. Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest part is how do you get the word out? How do you convince people to come back? How do you handle customer service interactions? There's so much beyond like baking the perfect cookie.
Exactly. And that's some of the things the Special Improvement District tries to do as well. We try to push out the information on the new businesses in our weekly newsletters. We try to promote them on our social media. We're also trying to get the word out to all the office building managers that these new businesses are opening, help everybody out with the promotions, and also allowing the business owners to understand what the environment they're getting into. So, you know, we talked about the pandemic. We do see a really big influx of office workers on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mondays and Fridays are less busy.
So if you were going to have a day that you're closed, you should be like, don't do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Exactly. Yes.
You definitely want to be open for lunch.
Right. And that was a problem even before the pandemic, that if you're a restaurant, you really could only make your money from 11 a.m. to about 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. Well, now we've cut that back where it's probably just Tuesday through Thursday. And so there are challenges. How do you staff for 5 days a week, even though your business might not be the same on all 5 days?
Yeah. And how do you incentivize the residential that clearly seems like will be the future of making those businesses profitable?
Right. And we have to just keep helping the residential come online. The city has had programs for a couple of decades to try to spur new residential development. Those incentives are still in place. We ended last year at about 12,000 residents. We were hoping to get up to 13,000 by the end of this year. But it's going to take a lot to replace a lot of the office workers that we lost that are going to work from home 5 days a week.
Yeah, we've also, I mean, for all we're talking about what it costs to renovate a storefront, converting an office to apartments is a whole complex process.
Right. And I don't think Columbus has fully cracked that nut yet. We've done some great projects. The Edwards Company rehabbed a portion of the PNC Tower, so the upper floors are now residential. And we know developers are taking a look at other buildings like that. But there was recent information came out about downtown Cleveland. They really have been leading the way with office to housing conversions. And they seem to have a good system set up between the private sector and the public sector to really make those conversions happen and make it as easy as possible.
I've read about some, I think, mostly out west, because the challenge is if you have a big interior space, that's great for an office, that's terrible for apartments. Nobody wants to live without windows. I don't even think you can legally live without windows.
Right. And I think we're going to see some creativity happen with some of these buildings. A building that's under conversion right now, the Continental Center, is getting converted into 400 residential units. They're using some of that interior space for storage. People always need storage. They always want a place for their Christmas decorations. And the storage doesn't need windows. And then they're also being creative. And we saw this even with new builds about putting transom windows at the top of the walls for the bedrooms so that the light, the natural light's really flooding the living room, but then it can reach back into the bedrooms.
Yeah. Sounds like they might do a lot of railroad style construction.
Right.
I grew up in like a suburb essentially of New York City. So those railroad apartments where they're one after the other are pretty common.
And we do have a lot of older office stock where the floor plates really aren't that big and they do lend themselves very well to conversion. And in fact, that's one of the things holding them back from being a really good office, because with office, of course, you want as large floor plate as possible. With residential, you don't need that.
So we're a year into the ground floor growth initiative, and the businesses are just starting to open. So definitely too soon to see whether it's been a success.
Right. I think they've been doing really well so far. And even with the coffee place at Broad and High, right now they have a trailer out front. That trailer does a really great business. And so once they move inside, I think things will go gangbusters.
And we're getting a new set of grantees in just probably just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm excited to see who they'll be.
Are you surprised by the number of applicants? 100 last go around, almost 80 this go around for 4 or 5 spots?
I am a little surprised. It's great to see. You just never know how big and how broad that entrepreneurial spirit is with folks. I know it kind of took off after the pandemic. And so for women and minority-owned businesses to see that many and that many want to be downtown is really heartening.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a leap of faith anytime you start a new business or a new job or a new endeavor.
Yeah. And we're trying to, again, reassure people. You brought up safety earlier. Again, downtown's extremely safe, and we are there with our services 7 days a week. So we have uniformed ambassadors that provide a reassuring presence. They're connected all together with other security operations with the radio system. We hire special duty police officers that patrol the sidewalks and also address hotspots as they come up. We've been doing some additional late night patrols to deal with some of the issues we've had at the nightclubs. We also then have 3 homeless outreach workers that engage with anybody on the street who might be in need. A lot of times we hear from folks who haven't been downtown in a while or ever. They come downtown, they see somebody in crisis on the street, and that makes them feel unsafe. And it's concerning that we have those folks out on the street because we want to get them help. But that's where our outreach workers come in. And last year, they were able to help 312 individuals get off the street.
That's great.
Yeah. And so by being that reassuring presence and then meeting the folks where they're at, we think we can really not just keep downtown safe, but make everyone feel like it is safe in the way it is.
Final question for you. You referenced a newsletter earlier, but if someone's like, hey, I'd like to be on a list or be in the know when these places come online, how do they find that?
Two places. They could go to our website, downtownservices.org. We have an email newsletter, Inside Scoop. But then also there is the website downtowncolumbus.com, run by Downtown Columbus Incorporated. I would definitely get on their email list as well, because they also have a lot of information about what's going on throughout downtown, along with what's happening at Columbus Commons.
That was Mark Conti, Executive Director of Capital Crossroads and the Discovery Special Improvement Districts downtown. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk to 2 business owners in the first round of ground floor growth grants. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Saver. The Ground Floor Growth Initiative began last October as its mission to diversify downtown and boost women and minority business owners, building out the first floor and bringing people back to downtown Columbus. We've been talking this hour about how the program is going 1 year into operation, and joining me now are the owners of the first 2 businesses to receive support from the initiative. Isabel Bonatello, the owner of 3 Bites Bakery, welcome to All Sides.
Hi.
And Douglas Buckley, the owner of Black Kahwa Coffee, welcome.
Thank you.
So this question is for both of you, and we can start with Isabel. How did you first become aware of the Ground Floor Growth Initiative, and what made you apply?
So actually, the mother of my current landlord, she came in, Carol Tomko, and she came into our original space on Mount Vernon Avenue. And she really, really was interested in getting us into one of their vacant spaces. And then she's also the one who just kind of directed me towards the program.
What about you?
I would say through the business community, I heard about the program. I had the opportunity to work with Downtown Columbus, and we put our mobile coffee trailer on the Scioto Mile. And I was told about the program, and I thought it'd be a great opportunity to pursue a spot downtown. Yeah.
So what has the process been like, Isabel? How did you use the renovation assistance? How is this helping you get this new location off the ground?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest assistance, I would say, is the capital, you know, the financial aid. Building out a space, especially for a food or beverage-related business, can be really, really expensive. And unless you want to go into lots and lots of debt, just having the ability to have the money up front is really helpful, I would say.
So what does Three Bites Bake?
So we are an Italian and Filipino-inspired bakery.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of do a little bit of everything. We do croissant pastries, cookies, sweetbreads, loaves, and cakes. And then we also have a lunch menu, breakfast sandwich menu, kind of a little bit of everything.
That actually sounds really good. And Douglas, you obviously do coffee, but can you tell us what makes Kahwa special?
Yes, and it is our the second name of our business is Kahawa, which is
Am I saying it wrong?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Well, it's interesting because there's a story there that the Kahwa is the Arabic and Kahawa is the Swahili, and Kahawa is the word for coffee in Swahili.
I took Arabic in college. This explains why I did that.
Yes, and what's interesting about the origin story of coffee, which is what our brand is kind of exists to tell, is that coffee first started growing in East Africa, and then it went across the Red Sea to the Arabian Peninsula to Yemen. But there's a lot of connections with the Arabic and the Swahili. So our coffee is coffee from East Africa.
Kahawa.
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 Kahawa coffee.
Not kahwa, that's Arabic. Gotcha.
Yes.
That is awesome. Is there anything that makes it different? Because I know sometimes Middle Eastern coffee, at least in my experience, is a lot stronger than traditional drip American coffee. So you got to know what you're buying. Is there any kind of warning on yours?
Yeah. East African coffees are marked with like a bold fruitiness or a rich chocolate notes.
Mm.
And it's the elevation. There's a lot of mountainous regions there. And the soil and the temperature kind of cool mornings and then warmer days are very good for coffee growing.
Yeah, I think that sometimes people don't realize that coffee can have a regional flavor, a seasonal flavor. A lot of times what you get from big box roasters is overly cooked beans to produce uniformity in taste.
That's very true, Anna.
Not that I drink a lot of coffee or anything. So, Douglas, what has it been like building out this retail space with the help from the Growth Initiative?
It's really been an amazing opportunity. I'm one of the businesses that did not have a brick and mortar before. I started my business roasting coffee out of a trailer that then became a food truck. And now that truck is on the corner of Broad and High on our patio. And we're building out the inside. It's a learning process. Sometimes that can be frustrating. But the biggest thing I would say is thankfulness for the program. And both Isabella and I are renting from the same building owner, and they are amazing. And they've really been a strong support to us and have some of their employees on site that are really helping to guide and facilitate the process. So I'm really excited. We're going to be opening a roastery and bar, and it's going to be serving coffee in the morning, and it's going to be serving alcohol at night, and some of either in between.
I'm sure there'll be coffee-flavored cocktails.
Yes, there will definitely be espresso martinis. We're going to have we have a Zanzibar Spice Simple Syrup that is something that we're known for, and we have a Zanzibar Spiced Espresso Martini that we're going to be featuring, which is going to be very exciting.
Okay, that sounds really good, actually. Isabel, have you used any of the wraparound services, the marketing, the bookkeeping? I know you had a bit of brick and mortar location, but what's it been like to have that, like, phone a friend?
I actually just spoke with her name's Kim Knights, and we are going to try to do a little bit more on the marketing side. That's something that I just always struggle with. You know, I'm a baker, not really into PR. Yeah, not really into marketing or
PR.
They're
two different skill sets.
They're very different, believe it or not. But yeah, so like just being able to have people that you can reach out to like that and who want to see you succeed is huge. Like knowing that everybody who's supporting us, they want to see us do well. And so that's been really encouraging, I would say.
So obviously there is another round of applications out. What advice would you have for anyone who just put their application in and is waiting to hear back, maybe going to that site visit, that second round of discussion?
Advice?
Yeah, thoughts?
I mean, definitely just like be excited. It's a cool experience no matter what. You know, at least I think for us, Michael Tomko has been really great, really helpful. There's some really good people involved. And just to, like, be excited. And you know, even if you don't make it through this round of applications, you know, hopefully it does enough to still, like, encourage people to pursue a brick-and-mortar space.
Yeah, I would echo that and say just the people that you're meeting along the way are so valuable. This is at the heart of the city. Like, these are people that are making things happen in our city, and it's exciting to get to know new people, learn from them. And I feel like for me, I got connected to the ground floor growth also because we had been participating in the Columbus Coffee Festival over the last 3 years, and the founder of Columbus Underground saw how people were responding to our business. And he introduced me to people connected to the Ground Floor Growth Initiative. So you never know, I guess, which relationship can be a link to what's going to be next for your business.
You're going in the old Tim Hortons location at the corner of Broad and High, right across from the State House. Great place for coffee. When are you going to open?
We are opening. That's an interesting question. I've faced some challenges in how I've responded to this because we're opening in November. I have like a targeted week, like the week of the 18th for like a soft opening. And then we're going to be doing a grand opening early in December, but we are going to be opening in November. I don't have a day for you right now. There's a lot of logistics.
Gotcha. But you have social media if someone wants to keep an eye on when you're opening?
Certainly. If you want to like follow our Instagram page, @BlackKahawa, you can find out. We'll certainly be posting about that. And one thing that I'm really excited about being across from the State House, I just want to share is it's significant for me that I get to share. Our brand is all about sharing the East African origin story of coffee. And to get the opportunity, it's kind of like how things have come together to be able to share that at the founding intersection of the city, where like literally Columbus exists because they decided they wanted to bring the State House from Chillicothe to this forest, which is now Columbus. And the man who was hired to do the street grid decided to, his name is Joel Wright, and he decided to do the street grid where Broad and High would be the founding intersection, which determines north, south, east, and west. And to be able to share coffee's origin story from that location, it means a lot to me as a Columbus native.
Isabel, where exactly is Three Bites Bakery?
So we are actually located like two doors down from where Black Cajal will be opening, in the old Jack and Benny's location. So also right across the street from the State House as well. And we are actually sharing our space with another business called Little Cat Boba. So it's like coffees, teas, matcha, all kinds of stuff.
Do you have a signature pastry or a favorite of the week, a favorite of the moment? I want to ask you favorite all time.
It's, you know, it really does depend on the day, but
or
I would,
the season for sure.
Yeah, the season. We definitely try to keep things seasonal. I would say our best seller is probably our bomboloni, which are Italian style brioche donuts filled with a thick vanilla pastry cream tossed in sugar. Yeah, those are, you know, we kind of, Raymond and I kind of created a little, you know, bomboloni and boba. So it's just kind of fun. And then, and then, you know, we have a lot of savory stuff too, because I'm a big fan of savory pastries. So like right now we have a spicy Japanese curry and kabocha squash croissant. We're always
one of those this morning.
Did you? It's really good. It's good. We're always
you guys are definitely making me hungry.
Yeah. And I, you know, I like to work with like my employees as well. We kind of play off each other's ideas. Maybe one of us will have an idea and we're like, oh, well, what if we do this or what if we do that? So it's kind of cool to see how things evolve. But I would say right now those are probably like the two favorite. But yeah, it kind of depends on the day. You know, I would staff favorites, the Chinese pineapple bun, the bolo bao, and then the Queen Amon are probably what we love to eat in the kitchen.
I have to say I'm a little jealous. I no longer work in that area anymore. I'll have to make a special trip. Do you also, I assume, do you have social media, Instagram, ways people can get a hold of you?
Yeah. Website is 3bitesbakery.com. And then Instagram is where we post all of our new like menu updates and stuff like that. It's just at 3bitesbakery, but the word 3, not the number.
Oh, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
So what is, this is kind of a big question. I can start with you, Isabel. What is success going to look like to you with this program? I know.
I mean, you know, to be quite honest, yes, I had a storefront on Mount Vernon Avenue in the Bronzeville area. As much as I loved it, you know, the actual space, we really struggled with foot traffic.
Mm.
So, you know, we're still kind of, and then we were delayed getting open and all this stuff. But, you know, I think success is just continuing to broaden our reach. You know, getting new and unique pastries in people's hands, you know, just continuing to build our reputation. You know, I don't know if success would necessarily have like a dollar amount for me, but to just be able to live comfortably and continue to share, you know, Filipino pastry isn't really super well known. And really Italian pastry isn't either. So to be able to continue to share that, share my culture with the city in a similar way that Douglas explained. It's cool that we're all going to be so close to each other, or that we are currently so close to each other. A lot of different cultural influences on just one corner, you know. And I think that that's very unique to what we're doing. And I think just to be able to continue to, you know, take care of my employees and have good relationships with customers, like I kind of think that's what success looks like. That's a tough question.
Yeah. I did forget. I do want to ask, do you do custom orders, custom cakes?
Yes, we do. Okay. We don't do like themed cakes, but right. We do like custom cakes in terms of flavors, sizes. We use fresh florals and we don't do like any food dye or anything like that. It's just all natural. But yeah, it's fun. It's, you know, we have fun cake flavors. I think very fun, unique cake flavors. And we do, you know, caterings with pastries and breakfast stuff and lunch stuff. So yeah, we're for sale.
Not the business.
Not the business, but like we, you know, for hire, I should say. We're for hire for sure.
Douglas, what do you think? This is your first brick and mortar. So what do you think success is going to look like for you here?
Yes, success, I think, will be, you know, remaining open, you know, past those 3 years. And I think success for me, one of the things that I'm very focused on is that I want people of all backgrounds to feel comfortable when they come into our space. So like having a diversity of people economically, racially, ethnically, just frequent our location. Sharing the East African origin story of coffee, like just people connecting, like, oh, they're focusing on East African coffee. That's because that's kind of our differentiator. And I had the opportunity to live in East Africa for 11 years, and I want people to connect with that story that coffee came from Africa and then traveled around the world. So, yeah, and then just, you know, as an individual, I am a father, a husband, father of three sons, and yeah, I want to be able to build something that I can continue to work at into my old age. That's kind of my vision, that we can continue to source coffee from different countries in East Africa and present that to people.
That was Douglas Buckley, owner of Black Kahawa Coffee. Thank you so much. And thanks to Isabel Bonatello, the owner of Three Bites Bakery. And thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.